here in Braves country.
Day.
How are you, Braves country? Hope you're having a good day, and we should have a much better night. Look, I know we lost a tough one last night, but when it's all said and done, we won the series. You know, it's funny, if you would have lost the first game and won the last two, you'd feel a lot better. Me personally, I feel better that we lost the last one because that's the one I kind of expected us to lose. Jared Schuster shouldn't be anywhere close to the starting rotation, the bullpen, anything, anywhere near the roster come October. We may see him one more time, two more times in September. You never know. But that would be just to get us to the finish line, to eat these innings. We talk about this all the time. When you have this big of a season, 163 games, and it's going as well or has went as well as it has for the Atlanta Braves, what you're talking about is eating the rest of these innings. I guarantee you they've got a formula. They have it written down. Okay, we have X amount of games left. How many innings does that project out to be? How many outs does that project out to be? All this goes in to preparing for each series. If you look at it, if you look at the big picture, and I was a little put off by something that was said last night after the post game. They didn't do a whole lot of post game because they were getting on the plane going to Colorado. But it was quoted by one of the Atlanta Braves beat writers. And he said, as you might have expected, reasoning for keeping Colin McHugh in was with an eye towards resetting the pen. And I get it. We've got this series in Colorado, and just historically, Colorado, it's got nothing to do with how good the team is. It's the stadium. And the Rockies have actually been playing much better baseball of late. They heck, they beat the Orioles yesterday 4-3. And they took him to the wire on Saturday, 5-4. Same thing on Friday. So they lost 2 of 3 to the Orioles, but lost by one run in each game. But what irritates me when I hear something like that is that honestly, and this is why I say this all the time, and I mean it, they're nice guys. But the Atlanta Braves beat writers, the entire bunch, not one individual. It's a soft landing for Snicker and company. It's not like it is if you were managing a team in a market where the beat writers want a definitive answer. And when they tell them something like that and saying, well, we're trying to reset the blah, 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 blah. And I know damn good and well, and I'm not going to call him out by name because it's not him. It's the entire group. It's all of them. I read all of them. And day after day, night after night, you're like, does anybody have a set that comes in a dump truck to be able to go, what are you talking about? Resetting the bullpen. You have a chance to win the game. And the bullpen had not been taken through the ringer. We were off on Thursday. And I'm just going to take you back through this. On Friday, Spencer Strider pitched lights out. Jimenez went one inning. Iglesias went one inning. That's it. So we have two innings from two guys. When we're talking about the bullpen, which is what is being reported, reason why they left McHugh in. On Saturday, and I know these guys are watching these games. It's not like I'm sitting here trying to tell you that I have a different take because I watch game by game, pitch by pitch bringing y'all the game. It's that's not it. They're in the booth. They're sitting at the damn stadium. But let's go to Saturday's game. And you look at that game, we won 7-3. Max Fried picked six innings. So we got seven on Friday, six on Saturday. Yates, Johnson, and Minter. Jimenez and Iglesias were used the day before. That means nobody has pitched back-to-back days. And the most that anyone pitched going into Sunday's game was one damn inning in the last 3 days. One. So then you go to Sunday, and the Braves are in a good old-fashioned rock fight, right? We're out there. We're scoring. They're scoring. We've got bad pitching, bad starting pitching. They got bad starting pitching. We're just trying to win a rock fight. Jared Schuster did not have it. He should not have been sent back out there for the fifth inning. That's number one. That was dumbfounding that he was sent back out there. I cannot believe it is all I can do to keep my cool on bringing the game. Now, you'll hear me make some comments, but I try to keep my cool because for the sounding off and the takes on how I think the team's going, that's what these shows are for. When I bring you the game, I try to bring it as honest as I can. My Braves blood does run deep and it does bleed out from time to time. But I try to keep my cool. But it's after the game where I soak it all and go, what the hell? And I see something like this. As you might expected, reasoning for keeping McHugh in was an eye towards resetting the pen. Some guys in preparation for a difficult week ahead with seven games in 7 days at Colorado and LA. I get that part. Things could unravel. But here's the thing. First of all, be shocked if Jared Schuster is involved in any of those plans. And I'm talking about even after the September 1st call-up. This is the kind of stuff where they don't push back on. And you can't tell me they don't know it. They're not thinking about it. September 1st is the call-up. You get to expand your bullpen by two slots. So what the hell are we talking about? We're talking about getting to Thursday, past Thursday, and no one going into the Sunday game had pitched more than one inning. I'm talking about the bullpen. Had pitched more than one damn inning in 3 days. What in the hell are you talking about? And the idea that Colin McHugh is the go-to guy when things are going tough is horse crap. We're going to get into that in a second. Michael Tonkin has earned the right to come in and save the day in that situation. He absolutely has earned the right. He's a better damn pitcher. He's got better stuff. Colin McHugh had a good run, but Colin McHugh has lost his fastball. When he first came to Atlanta, his cutter normally topped out around 91, even 92. It's now 89 to 90. And that is making a big difference, especially because he decided during this time period to go to that stupid-ass sweeper that doesn't touch the plate. I do not understand why he did it. I've been covering this team, doing play-by-play. Now, this is the third season. So I have an idea of what's going on. I'm not going to go toe-to-toe with anybody who was doing play-by-play much before that. At that point, I was just a fan. A diehard fan that knew the game But I see these guys day in and day out, and I see this stuff. And he used to throw a cutter, a version that they would call a four seam. It was more like a two seam. And he would throw a slider. And that slider, and we saw it one time last night, and by the way, the pitch worked. That slider, it's never had like a hard slide to it, but it's almost worked like a curveball, like a drop change. If y'all remember that pitch that was very popular years and years ago. This stupid-ass sweeper that he throws, if it's not hitting the zone, and it was nowhere near the damn zone last night, it's over. And Darnold was dialing it up, pitch after pitch after pitch. The first walk, he threw one strike. It was the cutter. The rest of them were the stupid sweeper. Didn't come anywhere close to the plate. He walked four damn guys last night. Four. And every single one of the at-bats, because I jotted down as I was going through, the majority of the pitches that missed on the bat on the at-bats with the walks, they were all the sweeper. If you have a sweeper like Beck did last night, that thing's nasty. I call that the wiffle, right? That's a wiffle ball sweeper where it's coming in fast and zips at you. Okay, fair enough. But when you're just basically throwing a bender that you're hoping will slap the zone on its way out of the zone, man, good night, Irene. It's over. He is at this stage in his career, and I love Colin McHugh in general. I love him in the booth. When they've had him in the booth, I think he's phenomenal. I think he's got a hell of a career ahead of him. He is more engaging and more interesting than most of the guys that are currently doing it on Major League Baseball booths right now. And I'm including every team. I'm not excluding the Atlanta Braves TV coverage. Colin McHugh would slide into that booth today, and I think he would be the best. I'm not killing anybody else. He's just that damn good. And he's had a pretty good career. But Colin McHugh, let's face it, he's a shadow of his former self. He's 36 years old. Father Time is undefeated. And when he comes in, there are times where he has good outings, solid outings, but I'm sorry, it is not worth keeping him in the conversation if everybody's healthy for the playoff roster. I don't want to see it. And the thing is, I know they're going to do it. There's a very good chance they're going to put him on the playoff roster. They're going to say, well, he's got experience and this and that. He doesn't get guys out, not in big spots anymore. And he's just, at this point, he is a guy that goes out. He normally gets it done against the really bad teams. You ever notice that? Against the Mets. He had a pretty good outing against a couple other teams. But when the chips are down, Colin McHugh is just an innings eater, and that's it. That's not what I want to see come postseason. I want to see someone that can get outs. Michael Tonkin has absolutely earned the right. We'll see what happens in September, but I liked a lot of the stuff we saw from Ben Heller. Dylan Lee's on his way back. There's just a lot of guys that we're going to have this option for, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But the Atlanta Braves, I've got some ideas on how I would like to see their postseason roster play out. And this is assuming health. I know you're going to go, well, I don't know if that guy's going to... Yeah. But I'm talking about everything falls perfectly and everybody's healthy within reason. I'm not going to throw Ian Anderson on the damn roster. But we'll get into that one second. But that bothered me. When he came in and he gave up all those damn runs... you know, Schuster's going to wear it and he's going to get the loss and he'll be the one that get the blame. He's not the one that lost that game. He's just not. It was Colin McHugh that lost the damn game. He came in, couldn't get a damn person out. Then they run him back out there for the sixth. After we go out there and claw our way back in, and he gives up two more, and then it's just like, all right, what the hell, man? So all in all, I know that was a big complaint session there. Sorry. I don't get to complain during the games like everybody else. I have to kind of sit there and go, and the pitch. Da-da-da-da-da. But if they don't figure that out in October, I'm not stressing over it right now realistically, but my eyes are on the prize. And I don't know if I've ever said that out loud in a season other than maybe when I was really young, didn't have a real grasp on baseball, and just always thought that every year was World Series or bust. But this year is World Series or bust. If we don't at least win the damn pennant, it has been a disaster. And I know everyone. I know there's a lot of folks who go, well, man, they gave us a good year. They won X amount of games, won another division. Yeah, that's great. But this can't start turning into what we saw in the 90s. For those of y'all who may be too young for that, I can tell you right now, it leaves a sour taste in your mouth year after year. We got to get to the damn show. And it's more difficult than ever. You know, I contend that if that Atlanta Braves team in the 90s, early 2000s would have been playing baseball in the 70s, in the 60s, hell, even in the 80s, the 50s, they would have had many more than one World Series ring. But you had extra layers, and now you've got another extra layer. So it is more difficult to win the World Series now than it has ever been. It's also easier to win the World Series now than it has ever been. And what I mean by that is, if you're the best team like the Braves are right now, if you're one of the best teams like Baltimore, the Dodgers, Tampa Bay, let me get this. If you're sitting in that situation, it is more difficult for you to win today, in today's game, than it was years ago. Because you have to go through the gauntlet. At the same token, if you're an average team, like Philly last year, San Diego, you get hot one weekend, you can knock someone off. You get hot for 10 days, you could really do something. And that's how we ended up with Philly versus San Diego in the NLCS. I don't know about y'all, but last year that NLCS felt dirty. Didn't feel like either one of those teams was even close to being the two best teams in the National League. It was a huge downer for everybody involved. Because if you look at the big picture of it, they would have loved to have had Dodgers and Braves in there. And they wouldn't have minded having in the World Series the Dodgers or the Braves versus the Astros. And I get it that Philly's a big market per se, but it didn't have the same oomph to it. It just didn't. Everybody knew it was a fraud World Series. The right team won in the end. The Astros were the best team. At least they were the best team left standing. You could make an argument that Braves team probably would have won the World Series again. But hey, we spit the bit. It is what it is. But I'm not gonna hide the fact I was pulling for the Astros in that World Series, not just because of the rivalry with the Braves and Philly. I didn't want to see some team that was utterly blah make that run. And I bet a lot of people felt the same way when the Braves won theirs in 21. Now, the difference between that is I do believe the Braves were hitting on all cylinders and were playing very good baseball. And they were doing all the right things. They were getting the hitting. They were getting the pitching. And you can make an argument for Philadelphia in that, right? But all in all, that Philadelphia team, to me, was a team with lightning in the bottle. It's not happening 2 years in a row. I know these Philly fans will sit there and try and tell you they're going to do it again. They're not. That Philly team I can make the argument that Philly team is worse than the one last year. And they're going to have more wins. But you're not going to go through another run in the playoffs and not run into the Dodgers and not run into the Braves. And this time I expect the Braves to be healthy enough and ready enough and ramped up enough to take on the Phillies and eliminate them if they run into them. If not, it'll be the Phillies taking on the Dodgers, and the Dodgers will knock them out. But we look forward to this series now, Colorado. And I will say one thing, just to put a lid on the San Francisco series. You took 2 of 3. Freed and Strider did their job. Strider looked phenomenal. Freed still coming back, but considering everything, a damn good job. He still isn't quite there yet. He's not back, but he's working his way to it, right? It could be a big step this week versus LA. But the other thing was that I had jotted down, Marcell Ozuna went bonkers again. How about that guy? Hits another home run. But put that aside. The base running blunders. I know we're living by the sword and dying by the sword. In the same game that you can jump up and down and pound the table, what the hell are they doing? Why is he sending Arcia in that situation? And I do believe that Arcia should have been called safe because there was not a definitive view to overturn it. I think logically you can say he probably got tagged, but there was no view. There was no view. And if they're trying to say that there was, it's horse crap. And understand, just before that, Travis d'Arnaud was sent on a play where he made a phenomenal slide. He shouldn't have been sent. But if you're going to live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword, and this is where we're at. And they're not switching out Washington. It just is what it is. He's got bad instincts at third base. He just does. He gets bailed out sometimes. But he has bad instincts at third base. You see it a lot. I've seen it so many times just this year where he's sending the guy at the wrong spot. Or how many times have we seen this? Go, go, go. No, stop. And then the runner has to slam on the brakes, about gets picked off at third. Or he's telling him to stop and he goes, no, no, go. And he gets gunned down. He has a theory and a belief, and they're in lockstep with him, so it's not changing, that the fielder is going to make an errant throw, so I'm going to send him if it's going to take a really good throw. Not a perfect throw, because I do agree with send a guy if it's going to take a damn perfect throw. If it's going to take a Yenis Cespedes throw from the deep left field corner to gun me down, then yes, send him. If you remember that throw. If it's going to take a Dave Parker moonshot from right field to gun me down at the plate, then send him. I get that part. But a very good throw, man, these guys are Major League Baseball players. And they are much better at throwing that ball accurately than they were when Ron was playing. And he knows that. But he figures he's going to test the waters. Because he wants to be the hero. When it all comes down, he wants to be the hero. He wants to be the one, oh, see, man, I sent him, but it worked out. But when you send a guy from third base, 75-80% of the time shouldn't be your win rate. You should be damn near 95% of the time, at least 90, of when you send a guy. Unless it's a dire situation, and you're like, you know what? I took a chance. But time after time after time, come on, man. Get it together, Ron. That's all I'm saying. All right, we move on to the Colorado series. I think we're going to get a 11th hour type of announcement on who's going to pitch on Wednesday. Doesn't matter what they do with the roster now. They won't commit until Tuesday night. Late Tuesday night. That's the same thing that they did. Remember they brought Schuster up on what, Monday or Tuesday last week? And it ended up being he sat there and sat there and sat there, then he pitched on Sunday. It'll be the same type of thing. Now, what they're doing now, because it's already been announced and manipulated and put into MLB, ESPN, all of them. Spencer Strider has been pushed back an extra day. So this is exactly what I alluded to late last week that I thought would be the game plan, and sure enough it is. Spencer Strider pitched on Friday. Typically, you can go Friday to Wednesday. 4-day rest. Let's go. Let's get it. But the Braves are more concerned about putting their best foot forward against the Dodgers than they are about winning every single game. Because now, with the Dodgers, one game equals two. And the Dodgers, going into today, four games back. But the real number you're looking at is the loss column. So they are legitimately four games back of the Braves. Braves have 84 wins. They have 80 losses. 45 losses, 49 losses. The magic number for your Atlanta Braves going into today versus Baltimore and the Los Angeles Dodgers to have home field throughout the playoffs is 3-0. So 30 games, win, lose, or draw, or 30 games, for folks who may be a little confused by the magic number, it means a combination of Atlanta Braves wins and Dodger Orioles losses down the stretch, whoever has the better record. But as of right now, they both have 49 losses. That's why I mentioned them both. If the Braves win the next 30 games in a row, they clinch. But if along the way the Dodgers are and Orioles, let's say they go 20-10, the Braves would clinch 20 games from now. So you need 30 wins, or 30 wins by the Braves, or Baltimore, Los Angeles Dodger losses, the combination, down the stretch. So it's still very much in question. We had such a big lead, and then we kind of stubbed our toe and kind of went, meh, and Baltimore and the Dodgers really started taking off. The Dodgers got really hot. What did they win, like 11 in a row, something like that? And they were playing like the Rockies and the Diamondbacks 47 times in 2 weeks. But the Braves now look, we get back from this series. We have seven more of these damn games left on the road. on the West Coast, and it's always the toughest one. But we're off to a good start. We're 2-1. I said it before, and I'll say it again. I would love to see that we are 6-4 on the homestand. So we're off to a great start, 2-1. That means if we take 2 of 3 from the Rockies, we 4-2. And if we can split with the Dodgers, that's your 6-4. I said it before and I meant it. I'll take the 6-4, but that doesn't mean I'm going to be happy about it if 3 or 4 of the losses are to the Dodgers, right? But 6-4, so what we're looking at this week, if we can go 4-2, I would be thrilled with 4-2. 3-3 you'll deal with. You'd be much happier with 3-3 if 2 of those wins are against the Dodgers. But what they're doing with the pitching rotation for the Dodgers series. So you've got here in the Rockies series, you got, what do we have? We have Elder tonight versus Gomber. By the way, Gomber has pitched really well. This guy that came over in a trade from the Cardinals a couple years ago, he's a southpaw. And the thing is about him, he's got pretty good stuff. But he's been up and down his whole career. He's pitching well right now, so we're getting him at a bad spot. Hopefully the Braves can get to him. I've got faith that they will. But he is pitching well right now, and you can't ignore that. It's going to be Elder versus Gomber. It's going to be a tough matchup, but I think the Braves' bats will bail us out. After that, by the way, Gomber, he's going to come in, and you're going to look at the numbers. You're going to say 9-9 with a 5.48. 1.47. What are you talking about? You got to look at what he's been doing of recent. And he has been pretty solid. I'll throw him out at you real quick. He had one bad outing against Arizona on August 16th. But outside of that, this is what he has done since, I'll tell you what, I'll take you back to, heck, all the way to late June. He went 5 innings and gave up 2 runs with the Angels. 7 gave up 2. In that span, those last 2 starts in June, those 12 innings pitched, he struck out 10. The big key for him to stay out of trouble is to keep the free passes to a minimum. Now listen to this. The month of July, he pitched 30 innings. He had 2 walks. 2! 17 strikeouts. He had a 3 ERA. Phenomenal. And he did that against the Giants, the Yankees, the Astros, the Padres. Pretty good offense. He did it against Washington. And Washington's been playing much better baseball, if you haven't been paying attention. Washington, they're not winning all their games because their bullpen's kind of sloppy, but Washington's putting up runs. Washington's playing pretty good baseball the second half of the season. In fact, at one point, I don't know if it's still going on, but at one point, Washington had the second best record since the All-Star break. It was either early last week or just a touch before that. They were like 21-14 during a certain stretch. And I remember when I brought that up, they won that night. So they were 22-14 at some point. I haven't paid attention to them a whole heck of a lot because they're so far down the standings. But they've been playing pretty good baseball. All right. Month of August, he's had one bad outing. If it wasn't for that outing, his numbers would look much better. So he's got a 4.43 ERA in August, but that was because of the bad outing against Arizona. They left him in too long. I went back and looked at it. They left him in too long. He started getting banged around, and anyways, he gave up 6 runs. But outside of that, 6, shutout innings in St. Louis. St. Louis has a lot of faults, but their offense is still solid. Here's the one that'll get your attention. 3 games ago in Los Angeles to face the Dodgers, they didn't win because he got zero run support, but he went 5 innings and 2 earned runs. The Dodgers, who love to eat pitches and run up your, he only walked one. Against Arizona, he got in trouble, but after that, at Tampa Bay, 6 innings, 3 earned runs. 2 via the home run in Tampa Bay. And we all know what kind of bandbox that is. So he's got some good stuff. I do think the Braves will get to him. But Gomber, to me, is a guy that if you take him lightly, look, he's 6'5", southpaw. That's going to be tough to pick up for guys like Harris, guys like Olson. This is where Austin Riley's got to step it the hell up. This is where Ronald Acuña Jr. needs to get off his slide. I won't call it a. He's not quite scuffling. It was a little bit of a slide, a little bit of a power outage. He's still getting on base from time to time and wreaking havoc. He'll get into one of them. But we want to see Ronald Acuña Jr. finish strong so Ronald Acuña Jr. can hold that damn MVP trophy next to his World Series championship trophy this year. This is the year we want to be able to talk about this year with Ronald Acuña Jr. for decades to come. You realize you grow up as a kid having to listen to some jackass tell you about You don't know what Joe DiMaggio did back in blah, blah, blah. You know, that's what we want to be that with Ronald Acuña Jr. We want to talk about him. We want to brag about him. He's our guy. And I'm really pulling for him to pull out of his slide. His numbers are going to be very impressive no matter what. And I do still think he's somewhat of a heavy favorite, but the gap is closing because Freeman and Betts are playing better and they're in the Los Angeles market. If those two jacklegs were in Kansas City and Cleveland, we wouldn't have to worry about any of this. But they want to give it to a Dodger. It just is what it is. You got to be better, a much better, to win the MVP if you're not playing in New York, Boston, Los Angeles. I'll even throw Chicago there, but Chicago is still kind of a flyover state type of feel. But because they've got a big population, they get a little bit of a nod. But those are the big three: Boston, New York, and Los Angeles. So Gomber is what we're going to be facing on tonight. And Elder better get that sinker down. That ball's going to fly in Colorado. Good news is, nighttime doesn't fly as far. Bad news is, it still flies. We got to put our best foot forward out there. And I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there. One of our biggest Achilles heel in this series. Well, there's two. For two different reasons. Let's see how many at-bats Nicky Lopez gets in the series. That's number one. You got Gomber on the mound tonight, so he's probably not going to get the start. But Nicky Lopez is a little bit of a hindrance at the second base spot in the batting lineup at Coors Field. Now, he can probably slap the ball around and get on base a few times, but all in all, let's be honest, he has a hard time hitting water falling out of a boat. Great glove man. Very impressed with his glove. Would never want to take him off the playoff roster because with his glove and his ability to base running, phenomenal add. But he's a slapstick. He's a slap hitter if I've ever seen one. The other thing would be Eddie Rosario in left field. With all that, because the biggest thing about the Rockies, Coors Field, everyone always focuses on the elevation. Nobody realizes, or maybe they just don't. I don't think a lot of people understand what makes that stadium so damn difficult. It's not just the elevation. That helps the ball fly, yada, yada, yada. It's wider than most fields. So there's more real estate to cover. And Eddie Rosario in left field is going to be a problem. It just is. He's just hard to take out of the lineup because he's hitting the ball really well right now. And you hate taking that kind of bat out of the lineup. I still would prefer to see the platoon situation, especially if we've got a lead, et cetera, or do it reverse when you got a lefty on the mound like tonight. The moment they go to the righty, I have no problem with going, all right, unless we've got a huge lead, all right, let's go ahead and get Eddie. Let's get Eddie to face the right-hander. I don't have a huge issue with that. But I like the idea of getting the at-bats for the other guys. So that's going to be a little bit of an Achilles heel. If they're hitting the ball into left center, Eddie doesn't cover the ground that a Kevin Pillar covers. He just doesn't. So we've got Morton and Lambert tomorrow night. And that one, we have a decided advantage. What I don't know, and we won't know until we see it live and in person, one of the problems that pitchers say that they have in Coors Field, by the way, Peter Lambert, he is a right-hander. He's got a 4.92 ERA. Nothing special about him. Solid pitcher, but he's not necessarily going to blow you away. 26 years old, 6'2". Does have, when you look at his overall numbers, he's not necessarily a strikeout pitcher. So pitch to contact guy and kind of guy that the Braves ought to be able to hit. But back to the Charlie Morton situation. What pitchers talk about more than anything else about dealing with pitching in Colorado because of the elevation, it's not what you would think that they'd be worried about. Oh, the fly ball, da-da-da-da-da. I've listened to so many different pitchers talk about this over the years. It's their stuff, mainly their breaking stuff. And that hitters are able to sit on their fastball because the fastball isn't affected as much with the elevation. But the curveball mainly, and we all know that Charlie lives on the curveball, it doesn't tend to break well. And because it doesn't tend to break the way he wants to, you're going to get into long at-bats, falling behind the count. Ducks on the pond. Here we go, here we go, here we go. That's going to be a problem. So, look, Elder's going to have the same issue with the sinker. But much more, I'm more worried about with Charlie. Mainly because his curveball is so designed to take that sharp, deep dive. And if it's not cutting through the air, and this is how they explain it. If it's not cutting through the air on the rotation, okay? If you can imagine, they've got the ball and they're snapping it, and the ball as it's rolling through, because of the elevation of the air, it doesn't cut it as much, so it almost floats. Now that float like we could see it from the naked eye float, like, because who the hell are we? But a major league hitter can see it. And they can tee off on it. So I'm really worried about game two of this series. Not that I don't think the Braves can outscore. I think they will. But I'm more concerned about what's it going to do to Charlie long term. And I'm telling you right now, first sign of problems, he can't get the... Go get his ass in Tonkin. Man, go eat his three innings. Let's go. Save Charlie for Sunday night against the Dodgers. Let's go. That's my biggest concern about this series in general. is what it may do to some of the pitchers when they come out of that series and we go to L.A., and L.A. may get the best of us. Everyone's, oh, the sky's falling, the sky's falling, the sky's falling. Pitching sucks, da-da-da-da-da. But it can take a bit of an adjustment. I mean, I'll be honest with you. If it was legal to do it, I'd say go send our damn Triple-A team pitching to go play the Rockies and let's rest up for the Dodgers. If we could do it and not have to go play in Colorado and give everybody the damn day off, let's get it. But unfortunately, you can't do it. This was back in the day when you had the 40-man roster, the September 40-man roster. Now it's just 28 with the 40-man taxi squad. I'd be praying that somehow we were playing them in September, and you just send all the bozos out there, and we'll see if we can outscore them. Let's go. If we lose all three games, whatever, we'll face the Dodgers. But anyways, that's not going to happen. That's pie in the sky thinking. I'd like to just say, to hell with this, because we have a team that is rolling, and the last thing I want to do is screw everything up with a three-game series in Denver. But anyways, go ahead and put a cap on this. You got to go high scoring tonight, right? First of all, yes, I do believe the Braves are going to win the series. I would like to think that we're going to sweep the series, but I don't know what Wednesday's going to bring. So I'm just going to stick with, and you know, I never predict a sweep because I think you sound like a real jackass when you think you're going to sweep. I think you're going to put bad juju on your team. So I'm sticking with, we're going to win 2 out of 3. Probably much like the San Francisco series. It's going to be much better in the first two than it is the last one. Tonight, the over-under is 12. That's actually fairly low for Colorado this time of year, especially considering the Braves' offense. I think it gets over. I think Elder's going to get banged around a little bit. His sinker, if it's not sinking, look out. I think the Braves will pound the hell out of the ball eventually. Might take them once through the lineup, but they'll get to Gomber. Give me the Braves themselves to put 12 on the board. I'm talking an old-fashioned just light show. Let's go 12-6, Atlanta. Pick to click with the southpaw on the mound. Damn it, Ronnie. Come on, man. This is where you can win your MVP. This is where you can seal the deal. This is the week you could win your MVP. Let's go with Ronald Acuña Jr. I would like to see Austin Riley get it together. But let's go with Ronald Acuña Jr. I want to see Matt Olson hit a couple out this week. This series. But I'm going to go Ronald Acuña Jr. in a high-scoring game. He might get 5 or 6 at-bats. Let's go. All right. That'll do it for us today. We'll see you at 3 o'clock. 3 to 5, we go live every single weekday. And we'll be talking Braves and baseball. We've got a couple other things we didn't get a chance to get to today on this on the Braves brunch that comes your way Mondays and Thursdays. But we've also got a lot of football that we're getting into. Woo! Look out. It's college football season. Finally, we got through whatever the hell these last couple of days where they tried to tell us that was college football kickoff. Spoiler alert, that sucked. We got through the NFL preseason, didn't we? That sucked worse. Every year the NFL preseason gets much worse. I have made a commitment to myself next year. I'm not watching a damn bit of it. I'll check the box scores, check the news. It is the biggest waste of time watching NFL preseason. And it's only going to get worse. You don't see anything. There you go. And also, anyone who's in harm's way of, was it called Idalia? It looks like it could be heading our way. So it could affect our, our broadcast schedule. We'll see what happens. We're hoping that it's not. My hope is that if we get any wind and rain, it's going to come through during the wee hours of, at this point, looking like Wednesday night going into Thursday, but we'll just have to see. I'm going to play that by ear. But right now we're planning on bringing all the games to you. But if it gets hairy, I'm not going to put my family in danger and we'll have to close up shop. But hopefully stays away. And hopefully we come out of this Rocky series unscathed. Also, real quick note. The plan is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night, all the Rockies games, right? Thursday night, Friday night, the Dodgers games. Friday night, it is, we're celebrating my birthday. It's not technically my birthday that day, but we're celebrating it because me and the guys get together and we do our fantasy football on the first Saturday of college football. We've been doing this for a few years. You probably have heard me talk about it. So we are going to put the chat up. And after talking about it with a couple of the guys that helped me with it, I think we're actually going to put it up early because the Georgia Bulldogs play at 6 o'clock that night. Alabama plays, I think it's 7. I think I have those times right. And then there's what I consider the big game that night. North Carolina, South Carolina is at 7:30. There's also like Penn State and West Virginia or whatever. So some pretty decent college football games leading into Braves-Dodgers Saturday night at 9 o'clock. So you're going to see the chat come up probably about 3 hours early. I think we're going to put it up in time for the Bulldogs game. And we're going to put the score up so people can follow the game. Games. And it'll switch over to Braves just before the 9 o'clock first pitch of the Dodgers. And I'll be in that chat. I know I will be because I'm going to have some libations and hanging out with friends and, you know, talking in the chat and everything. But the Sunday game, we are bringing the Sunday game. Even though it's a day game, it's a later day game, and I've been able to squeeze it into my schedule. So that's a 4 o'clock first pitch, Braves-Dodgers. Looking forward to that. Now, that's right before LSU Florida State, and if you follow the show, you know I'm going to be into that game big time. So no whammies. Hopefully that thing doesn't go into extra innings or something, but I'm not worried about it. Even if it does, I'll pause the football game and bring you Braves Dodgers because I'm just as excited. And I know that makes me weird in the South, but I'm just as excited about Braves Dodgers, maybe even a little more excited than I am about college football games kicking off. I know that makes me weird. I know there's a lot of folks out there going, what? College football? Sorry, baseball's number one to me. Atlanta Braves are whoop. All my other teams are whoop. And baseball to me is it. Professional baseball is where it's at. If I'm ranking and I'm being honest, I'm going professional baseball. MLB, probably college football, very tight with the National Football League. I like them for different reasons. I love the college football game. I really love playing fantasy football. And that's just the way it's when I was a kid, don't get me wrong, when I was young, when I was dumb, didn't understand things, college football would have been number one for me. But now it's Major League Baseball, and then college football. Just a better game. It's the greatest game ever invented. And it's much more history. And I don't know if anyone ever gets anything out of the turn back times that we do. But I enjoy doing them. I enjoy bringing them back to you. By the way, when the season ends, we're actually going to bring you more of our Once Upon a Pastime series. I've got a lot of them lined up. I just don't have time. I mean, this is a busy-ass time for me. All right, let's go ahead and step aside. I've blabbed on long enough. Y'all have a great day. See you at 3.
Graves Company.